Hey everyone, today's guest is Enzo, and he's the founder of June.so, a tool to visualize and measure the metrics for subscription businesses. And in this episode, we'll discover how they're growing 10% month over month and why you should monetize as quickly as possible. Now, today's episode is sponsored by Grain.com. Grain is the must-use meeting productivity tool for anybody who is customer-focused. It helps you bring the voice of the customer into the heart of your organization by enabling you to instantly clip and share the most important moments of your video meetings. If you are in a customer-facing role, whether that be product speaking to customers, gathering insights from your participants, or sales speaking to prospects, you should be using Grain to capture rich insight from your calls, and you'll never take notes again. Grain is a game changer for customer-facing roles, and it's super easy to use. Go to grain.com/SaaSPirates and get started for free. So Enzo, welcome. First off, can you tell us a bit more about June.so?
Hey Mike, thanks for having me. So June.so is the toolkit to build great product. So we're an analytics that you can connect on top of any, you know, product usage tracking that you have that helps you activate and retains your users or your accounts. So it's very a turnkey product. You just plug and play it, and it delivers, you know, all kind of insights and actionable tips on top of your usage data.
That actually sounds really helpful for a lot of SaaS founders listening right now. So let's talk about the business model. How are you making money?
So we're a freemium product. So you can start with us for free, and you can graduate into a paid plan once you actually get value from our product. And we assume you get value from the product once you have at least 1,000 monthly active users. So 1,000 people that have identified with a clear name, clear email, and things like that. And then our paid plan is $150 per month, or $30 if you go for the yearly plan. That's the basic plan we have. We have, of course, a couple of more enterprise-ready plans.
And how did you start a business? Take us back from idea to launch.
Yeah, I mean, the idea started a while ago. So I started doing product management 6-7 years ago. And as soon as I started, I got a pain, which was to, you know, just crunch my data, extract my data, and turn it into an insight. I first thought that it was a problem with the tools that I was using in my first company. I mean, the first company I worked for. And actually what I realized across the years and the different roles and the different verticals and the different company sizes was that the pain was everywhere. So at some point I just started to, you know, shape the problems around turning user behavior into insights, you know, really, really crunch on the problem, trying to think about, you know, potential great solution for that. And that's about when I met my co-founder, Ferruccio, that I met in my last job at Intercom. He was a product engineer there. I was a product manager. And I started to share the idea with him. I was like, you know, man, I have this problem. It's been 6 years. I don't think it's solved. And I don't think the world is going to solve it by itself. Do you want to, you know, spend some time with me to brainstorm? And that's about when I started to, you know, really started to build a solution around the product. I think that was the first big step. So first big step, sorry, figure out the problem, having it myself. Second big step, find someone who is motivated and wanted to work with that problem with me. And then the next phase is basically classic, you know, shape an alpha, a beta, launch that while we were still working in our previous, you know, job. And as we saw some, you know, early traction and appetite for the problem and the solution we built, we decided to take the leap of faith and, you know, left our job. I think we raised $50,000 from angels, just enough, you know, to make sure we survive and we don't have to do side gigs. And then we started to build up the, you know, the product. That, by the way, is something I strongly advise, to be focused. I think a lot of founders, you know, start their company and then on the side do something else. I think it's good only for a time. After some time, it kind of makes you less motivated or you have less momentum. So I think for us, it was very important to just have this, you know, little bit of money to make sure we could focus on the problem and build something at least that we were proud of.
Yeah. So building a product based on scratching your own itch, that's always a great thing. But the next step would be, I guess, to convince other people of the solution for this problem. So how did you get the first users to your product?
Yeah. So the first user started very early. I remember The first thing we did was a page with a button to connect the data source. And then we had one template that we do something that we call a feature audit, which is just a way to understand what features is being used. And so our assumption was that this was enough of MVP to convince people to, you know, start using our product. So there are two hypotheses we wanted to verify. One was that using a product for a single job, like a feature audit, was tempting and exciting because it's a hard problem to solve. The second one was that people were willing to connect their data source through APIs to a new kind of SaaS like us, even though it's a startup and we didn't have like a lot of securities back then, you know. And so we built that MVP, and what we did is we reached out to basically anyone we knew that had a you know, digital product, and asked them if they wanted to know which feature was being used in their product. And if so, they just had to do two clicks. And I think that's when we got our first user. I remember the name is Rally. They are some video platforms from YC. I think my co-founder knew them. I remember they connected a data source and were like, whoa, what's happening? And then, of course, the product was quite disappointing. But I think they were excited by the promise of the product, which was, back then, I think the signal we were looking for.
Yeah, and also, you never forget your first customer, right?
Yeah, it's not a paying customer. And they're not using the product today, but they had their role to play back then, you know?
What were some of the early struggles in getting to actual product market fit?
There were many struggles. I think I'm not sure we're entirely at product market fit, depending on how you define it. Like if product market fit is a you know, an area where basically you can't sleep at night because you just get pulled by like thousands of, you know, sign up every day, and people just throw money at you, we're not that company yet. And I think it takes time, if ever, you know, for a lot of people. But though we've cracked a lot of things, like we have, you know, a growing user base, acquisition channels, you know, growing revenue, pretty steady, pretty healthy, you know, things like that. So we did learn a lot of things along the way.
That's really great to hear. What is the one thing that you would say has brought you the most success in either getting more customers or more revenue from your current customers?
So I think one of the turning points was probably to turn on the monetization. We have been building that product for a year and a half. And for a long time, it was about, you know, using the product and seeing if you are sticky and retain and, you know, asking you some satisfaction survey and see if you were happy with the product, things like that. I think when we turned on the monetization, things changed a lot for us. Suddenly, we had literally two types of people. People that, you know, perceive enough value to pay for it and people that didn't see enough value to pay for it, right? And I think that was really surprising because we just assumed before turning on the monetization that the biggest users of the product would be the one paying, but it's actually not really the case. It's actually the people that have the biggest pain, right? And the biggest pain doesn't necessarily mean they're using your product 10 times a day. It means that they use it and they get value from it, right? So I think that was really the turning point. And an advice I would give to anyone starting is, you know, try to monetize as soon as you can, because it's going to bring you a lot of new learnings that you wouldn't expect.
That's really great advice. Monetize as quickly as you can.
Yeah.
What is your most important acquisition channel to get new customers on board right now?
It's word of mouth. It's very, you know, boring, but it's word of mouth. So basically, we try a lot of acquisition channels and a lot of initiatives. And what we learn is that almost anything we do tend to reinforce one main channel, which is the word of mouth. So basically, you know, let's say we bring like 10% of our customers through, you know, inbound or content, then these people are going to be on an average like an extra 2 or an extra 3. And if you, you know, put next to each other all these channels, even though they're like significant, they will always reinforce the main gear, you know, of our system, which is word of mouth. So word of mouth is our main acquisition channel at the moment.
I always like to say if word of mouth is your main channel, you are definitely doing something right with your product. So being the co-founder, what is your most valuable lesson up to this point?
I think the leverage is probably the thing that I learned the most as a co-founder. Like when you work for a company, you usually tend to execute within your scope. And I think something that fundamentally changes when you're a co-founder is that you need to leverage your resources. it doesn't mean you abuse from your resources. It means you leverage them. So, you know, recruiting people to do something better than you would, delegate something, you know, subcontract, things like that. I think that's extremely hard when you move from, you know, being a maker. I was a maker, or, you know, an independent contributor in a tech company. But it's really the thing that I'm learning, and I'm still learning, and that I think, you know, founders can have the most impact with if they understand that well.
That's an awesome lesson. At what stage is the product right now in terms of revenue and growth?
So we raised our seed round last year. And so now we're kind of like, you know, full steam to reach our Series A milestone. So we're between, you know, seed and Series A. Commonly to reach a Series A, you need $1 million ARR. So we're before that, basically. And we are post-revenue, so we already monetized and we are growing. And our target is to grow, you know, month over month by 10% the revenue.
Love it. A 10% month over month growth rate is awesome. Well, Enzo, let's wrap things up with a lightning round of 6 personal questions to inspire others. If you would start a SaaS today, what would be the first action to take?
I would either do some research, like I did for this company, if I feel that I was missing some understanding of my space. So let's say I meet someone who becomes my co-founder and he has the idea, but I don't have a good grasp of the problem. I would probably do some research first. I would try not to get lost into the research though. If the problem is clear to me, I would probably just start a community. You know, like just putting people together so that, you know, they can start talking about the problem with you. I think that's extremely powerful. These people will also give you a lot of color on the problem you're going after, but they will also most likely become your first users, beta testers, maybe customers. And, you know, a good product without a good go-to-market or a good community is probably going to have a hard time being successful.
What are some of your favorite software that you can live without in running daily operations?
I think Slack is probably my favorite tool at the moment. Again, it's quite boring, but I spend so much time in it. And the product is just consistently improving, and it's very, very stable, you know, so I'm very impressed. I think I just realized with Joon.so how hard it is to build such a stable piece of software. And when you know the amount of customers that Slack has, I think it's even more impressive.
And what about your phone? What's your favorite app on your phone?
I think it's Spotify. Again, it's not very exciting, but I'm just so excited about, you know, the weekly recommendation and just the product is very simple. I think, again, that's something I'm learning through Joon. Building a very easy product is actually extremely hard, much harder than I thought.
You know, it's such a great product with millions of users, and I think it's quite underrated from a product perspective, right? All of these little tweaks they're so good, and they're carefully rolling it out without you even noticing it.
Yeah, it's so smart. There are a lot of details, like you don't see them at first, but then when you look for them, you actually find them, and then you realize how much, you know, thoughts that they put into the product.
Yeah, exactly. So what is your favorite book that you would recommend to people that are starting in SaaS?
Well, there is a lot. I always recommend a book called Rework, written by the Basecamp people, Jason Fried and DHH. It's not going to be, you know, things like, you know, how to crystallize your value prop or how to, you know, like zoom on a problem, or it's not going to be very actionable for the SaaS world, but I think it's very important for more the mindset side of things. And so the book tells you a lot of good advices on, you know, how not to obsess on your competitors. I think that's, you know, something you should totally avoid when you get started. Otherwise, you just get pulled toward what competitors do. It's also a nice way to understand that if you work at night and you don't sleep, it's not going to be sustainable. You know, there are just a lot of nuggets like that in the book that you can actually use when you start a SaaS, and that I think kind of almost anyone should have heard. And the best thing, it's like it's very, very short. You can read it in 1 hour. And so, you know, when you're a founder, time is your most precious resource. So I would probably never advise a book of more than, 80 pages to a founder.
Yeah, agree. Always recommend that book as well. What SaaS brand do you admire the most?
We used to work for Intercom. We're a big fan of Intercom. I think they did an amazing job on the brand and on the content. So yeah, props to them.
And what is your favorite SaaS person or indie hacker to follow or read?
There's a lot. We just mentioned Sergio from Makers. I really like Sergio. I think he's a machine. We worked a little bit together. It's always a pleasure. So on the Maker side, he's great. Level Zero is a legend, right? It's hard not to mention him. And then, you know, on the product side, Des Traynor from Intercom is like such a, you know, such an inspiring leader. And again, consistently over the years, he's always relevant and on point. He has a couple of very good talks about, you know, strategy, product strategy, that are things that I think are very relevant also for SaaS founders.
Well, great, Enzo. Thanks for your time today and sharing your story with us. To conclude this interview, where can we learn more about you and June.so?
Yeah, so you can find us on Twitter. So June is June.so, and I think following the account is the best piece. We also offer a discount for the people that you know follow the podcast. So we offer 3 months of growth plan for free, which is worth $450. For that, you can just sign up in June and then, you know, reach out in the chat and mention the code SaaSPirates. Or you can write to us at startups@june.so, startups with S, plural, and also mention SaaSPirates in the title, and we'd be very happy to apply the discount within 24 hours or 48 hours max.